Senate will please come to order. Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Roll call for Friday, February 29th. Anderson?
Here.
Allman excused. Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
DeCaria?
Here.
Vecht?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Hines?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Job?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Larson?
Here.
Massey?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Mockler? Nicholas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Scott,
here.
Sessions,
here.
Townsend,
here.
Basie,
here.
Bonflatern,
here.
President Schiffer.
Here.
29 present, 1 excused.
A prayer by Senator Hastert.
Good morning. As we pray, Heavenly Father, as we end our third week of deliberations in doing the work of the people of Wyoming, we ask for your continued guidance as we ask for your continued wisdom and especially understanding as we finalize our tasks at hand. We pray for those that cannot be with us, and especially those that are serving in our military, that you may protect them and bring them home safely to the ones they love. Give those that are facing difficulties in their lives the special graces that their lives require. Protect those that are traveling this weekend. Help guide them safely on their journeys and return them back safely. As we conclude this session, be with us as we help us to be understanding of each other, and as this we say, amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, and approval of the journal. Would the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 28th, 2008, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Perkins, chairman.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the journal committee report is approved. Fellow senators, our doctor for the day, and he's here. Is George McMurtry from Gillette, one of our ex-colleagues. George, welcome back. It's good to see you again, sir. Good to see you, George. Our nurses for the day are Betsy Hartman from Thermopolis and Donna Hayes from Riverton. Please make them feel welcome. Our thought for the day: success is a journey, not a destination. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The floor is yours.
I have the honor today of introducing the Teacher of the Year to the Senate. She's one of my constituents and lives in Laramie. And since really Senator Nicholas and I share everybody in Albany County, she also is one of his constituents too. She's currently a fourth grade, Eileen Johnson is currently a fourth grade teacher at Indian Paintbrush Elementary School in Laramie. After receiving her degree from Northwest Missouri University in 1980, she taught for many years, 25 years in special education. As she notes, she came out of school armed with the knowledge that all children deserve an education that meets their need and enables them to experience personal success. Since 2005, she's been in the fourth grade classroom. She made the transition from special ed into fourth grade. Each and every day, Eileen recognizes that she is never alone in the work of education. She has strong working relationships with so many of the other people in the school, as well as with the parents. As she notes, I feel that I have been privileged to contribute to the field of education by respecting, valuing, and providing a challenging education to each student entrusted to my care. She's also very involved in our community in so many different ways, besides just simply being a teacher. She volunteers with Special Olympics, 7 years a summer camp director, and is even a host, family, and a parent for our summer baseball players who come from around the country from various colleges. Eileen feels that she is entrusted with the dreams of children and asks, can there be any better place to be? And just to relate a little bit of a personal experience, my son Jed first went into her classroom in third grade. The first couple of years in Laramie was somewhat mixed for him. Laramie wasn't used to somebody with that degree of disability. But when he got to third grade and got to Eileen's classroom for the next 4 years, you could see he really just simply blossomed as a human being because Eileen was so good at connecting him with every single part of that school, including his peers, providing the special education needs that he really required. There's so many different stories I could relate, but one that Eileen related to us was the one time the kids came in and said, can Jed go out and play? They were playing kickball. And she says, yeah, go ahead and take him out there. So they wheeled him out in his wheelchair, and he was out there for about an hour. Came back in just fired up and so happy and just covered from head to toe in dirt. So we really weren't quite sure how he participated in that game out there. But he's the person he is today, thanks a great deal to Eileen. So I want to introduce to you the Teacher of the Year, Eileen Johnson.
Oh, thank you so much. It is my great honor to be here with you today. I am completely humbled by the events of this year. There are so many wonderful people, as Mike mentioned, that go into this process, and you being a huge part of that. I am in absolute awe of the process that happens here, of what you accomplish for our children. You have no idea the cheering that goes on in the schools every day when something that you have decided or the work that you have accomplished makes a difference for our children, because we know that's truly what it's about. When I plant a tree in the spring, and heaven knows I have planted many trees in Wyoming waiting for them to grow, it's, you know, we plant a sapling with the joy of watching that grow into a strong tree with a hope and a dream that that will happen. And that is the dream that we dream for our children and for our future. And it is my great joy to come and share with you here today that dream is alive and well in Wyoming schools. I have never had a time in my teaching experience of 25 years and 25 years in special education, 3 years in fourth grade, where I was more excited about teaching. And it's not just because of this honor that has been bestowed this year. It has been because of the partnerships that are happening in teaching. You are the partnership that is happening for us. I want to thank you for all that you do, and thank you for making the dreams happen for our children. So thank you.
Okay, concurrences. Senator Larson, are you ready on a concurrence on message number 214, Senate File 44, Residential Mortgages Practices Act?
I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in the message?
February the 28, 2008, from the House of Representatives, message number 214, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 44, Residential Mortgages Practice Act. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 5. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message 214 and ask the Senate to vote no. It came back with 2 pages of amendments, second reading, third reading, some, all by one individual. I can't track it clearly yet. I'm not sure what the attempt to do is. We have to get together with them and check with the sponsor and to see whether we've done irreparable harm or damage yet. And so I would like to have you vote no at this time. We can then get together and meet with them and try to make some sense out of some of this 2 pages of amendments. So I would ask you to vote no.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 44, Residential Mortgages Practices Act, and you are requested to vote no. Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
No.
Allman excused. Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Fecht?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job? Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson? Massey,
no.
Meyer,
no.
Mockler,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Scott,
no.
Sessions,
no.
Townsend,
no.
Basie,
no.
Bonflatern,
no.
President Schiffer,
no.
Closing vote closed. 29 noes, 1 excused.
Fellow senators, by your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 44, Residential Mortgages Practices Act. And senators, I'm going to go ahead and appoint the conference committee. It appears to me that we may have quite a few conference committees. It's something in the air or something. Time becomes short, and so we're going to move this through rather than waiting on the conference committee for Senate File 44, Residential Mortgages Practices Act, will be Senator Larson, Senator Bebout, and Senator DeCaria. In addition to that conference committee, I'm going to go ahead and appoint a conference committee for House Bill 55, Water Well Drilling and Pump Installation Licensure. On that conference committee will be Senator Geis, Senator Scott, and Senator Vasey. Conference Committee for Senate File 9, State Retirement Board Immunity, will be Senator Case, Senator Landon, and Senator Mockler. We're moving those through so we have good opportunity to visit with the House, and we need time to do that. And that's, I am pushing them forward, but that's what I got in mind. Reports from standing committees.
February the 29th, 2008. Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 117, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Coe, Jennings, Von Flatern, Conflict, Senator Massey, Senator Coe, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 127, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Fecht, Hastert, Landon, and Scott, excuse, Senator Allman, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 83, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 143, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Johnson, Perkins, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 69, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, DeCarrier, Hines, Mockler, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 102, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Coe, Jennings, Massey, Von Flatern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 83, which was just read out, does have an appropriation on it. I request that it be re-referred to committee number 2.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 83 is re-referred to committee number 2, Appropriations. Members of the Senate, please note, your Rules Committee is carrying the appropriate workload. You heard it, the report read in today, which confirms the rumor that we are a very hard-working committee. Let's see, we have, signing of bills. Enrolled Act Number 1 being Original House Bill 5.
Enrolled Act Number 1 being Original House Bill 5 and Act relating to gasoline tax distribution.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 1 being Original House Bill Number 5. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 2 being Original House Bill Number 7.
House Enrolled Act Number 2 being Original House Bill Number 7 and Act relating to the Real Estate Commission.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 2, being Original House Bill Number 7. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 3, being Original House Bill 14.
House Enrolled Act Number 1, being Original House Bill 14, and Act relating to nursery stock.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 3, being Original House Bill Number 14. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 4, being Original House Bill Number 25.
House Enrolled Act Number 4, being Original House Bill 25, an act relating to fire prevention and electrical safety.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 4, being Original House Bill Number 25. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 5.
House Enrolled Act Number 5, being Original House Bill 31, an act relating to public health and safety.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 5, being Original House Bill Number 31. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 6.
House Enrolled Act Number 6, being Original House Bill Number 45, an act relating to film incentives.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 6, being Original House Bill Number 45. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 7.
House Enrolled Act Number 7, being Original House Bill 64, an act relating to the state auditor.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 7, being Original House Bill Number 64. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 8.
House Enrolled Act Number 8, being Original House Bill 71, an act relating to public lands and fire suppression.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 8, being Original House Bill Number 71. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 9.
House Enrolled Act Number 9, being Original House Bill 59, an act relating to the Personal Opportunities with Employment Responsibilities Program.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 9, being Original House Bill Number 59. I have so signed. Bills on second reading. Senator Fecht.
May I have privilege of the floor, sir?
The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Seated behind you, sir, is my good friend Pat Swan. She is with the Wyoming Federation of Republican Women. Their president is Rosemary Skunk. There are ladies here today to watch us. From Casper, Sheridan, Torrington, and Laramie, and Albany counties. Would you please make them welcome? Thank you.
Welcome, ladies. Enjoy your day at the Capitol. House Bill 17, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 17, Community College Commission Duty, sponsored by the Education Committee.
We do have some amendments. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 17, the BBOUT amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 17, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 4, line 8.
Senator BBOUT.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 17. Ladies and gentlemen, when I looked at this bill, I really think there's a lot of things in here we need to be talking about in reference to our Community College Commission and the Community College themselves. But when I looked at the one part of it on page 4 that talked about the Community College Commission will have veto power over programs that the boards work on and have at the local college, I had a little heartburn with that. And as I remember looking back at this particular issue, it used to be in the law before the year 2000. They took it out for 6 years, and then the task force met this last year and decided to come back with this. And of course, we all know that through the mirrored amendment process in the budget bill, that we're going to study community colleges again. I just think that we ought to be very careful what we do. I obviously am a proponent of local control, and I think those boards are elected. They should be making those kind of decisions, but in the spirit of compromise, because one of the arguments I heard, although I don't think it's true in my particular college area, but some of the trustees, they may not want a program to be in, but because of the politics of it, are not able to get it removed. And so I think that this might help them if that's the case, although I don't really think it could be. And the language says that they would recommend to the community college that it terminate a program based on low enrollment and some other things. And I look at a couple programs that got started, in particularly at the college up in Fremont County, that initially were not very well attended, and you could argue that they probably shouldn't be there, and particularly in nursing. And ladies and gentlemen, I would share with you that those are one of the best programs we have. So if you'd had a recommendation from a board to say terminate those early, you'd never had an opportunity to really see the benefits of them, and they're huge benefits. So the purpose of this amendment, Mr. President, is just to move a little bit slower. Let's let the local boards make these decisions. But the commission can recommend that they do terminate. I would ask for your support.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. President, rising reluctantly in opposition, just some background. This was a recommendation that came to us from the governor's task force study last year, final report recommendation number 16. Some of the justification in Wyoming statute 2118-202D, small little I, requires that the Wyoming Community College Commission approve all new credit certificate and degree programs. So prior to the statutory changes made in the 2000 legislative session, which is where this happened, the Wyoming Community College Commission also had the authority to review and terminate existing programs in the event of low enrollments, lack of jobs for program graduates, unnecessary duplication. So the majority of the commissioners in this report believe that the Wyoming Community College Commission oversight of all certificate and degree programs, remembering that we spend some $260 million with community colleges, is essential to ensuring the collaborative delivery of community college courses and programs statewide. So this is a recommendation that came to us that the Wyoming Community College Commission endorsed. It turns around what we did in the 2000 session. I think we have to remember that we have a huge investment in what goes on locally at the community colleges. We have to think about the big picture. So reluctantly, I ask that you defeat the amendment.
Senator Von Flager.
Thank you, Mr. President. Standing on and against this amendment, having been on that task force, the conversations were that, as the good senator from Cody said, the state has a good investment in this. The state also approves the course to begin with. 60% of the cost approximately across the colleges is paid with state money. And then, as the good senator from Fremont the bringer of the amendment said, because of political reasons. And I cannot imagine a commission which has the presidents also advised to from all the colleges that they're going to recommend a program be terminated that has good justification for being there. But there was those rare moments, as they said, of somebody that may be a great benefactor to the college, really likes this program and don't mess with it. Well, politically, it's costing the state about 60%. If they want to pay all of it themselves as some kind of private course with credit, it's a possibility. But we wanted to take the politics out of it if it got to that point, which it has not, by the way. But we just wanted to leave it in there because the state is paying that majority of the funds going into those courses. So I ask for the defeat of this amendment.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. President, rising in support of this, and I'm glad we're now starting to take recommendations of task force seriously. That's a first. But having experience with a BOCES, a small BOCES that had an excellent relationship with a community college, there are times that enrollment falls off and comes back. You know, I got to say, if you would have ran a welding program in 1983, then there was no work, it should have been snuffed. Who was doing it? Now, it's one of the most popular projects we have. And all this amendment says is recommend. And if the commission recommends, that gives you a little leeway either to get some enrollment in that class, to publicize it, to counsel students to get in there because they're going to need it, or not. And it's a simple little thing that says we're going to let maybe the academic people that work in this all the time, the guidance and counseling people, to look at their program and not do it from on high someplace.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a question. If we don't accept this amendment, we have a little program in Casper where we've started a program to train power plant operators. It's a very small class, but there was a very large federal grant included in starting this program, and there's some industry participation. The program's not expected to really get going for another 2 or 3, 4 years. Right? It started with a full class, and then a bunch of the guys that couldn't cut it fell out. And we're only talking about a 15-student class. So if we don't pass this and we stay with the original language and the commission decides that they want to get rid of that, what happens to the investment by the federal government? What happens to the investment by the private sector? And what if after they close it, they decided, well, let's reopen it in Campbell County because that's closer to one of the power plants? So I think that recommend probably would be a better approach to it than they could do it. And I think you'd go back to programs like this where there is a financial investment. We might ought to take a closer look.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. The wording in the amendment saying recommends really is very important here. It completely turns around the meaning of this part of the recommendations coming from your interim committee. Recommends doesn't have any power whatsoever. And community colleges are well aware of the consistently low enrollment, and if they wanted to terminate it, they would. So the commission coming in and recommending that they do it really isn't going to have any kind of power whatsoever. There's an awful lot of classes being offered across 7 community college systems in which there's a great deal of duplication. And sometimes that duplication is justified, especially, say, in the associate degree in nursing programs around the state when we have such a nursing shortage. But with also a lot of community colleges competing with each other for vocational education programs and other programs that can be very expensive. And again, the state on average pays 60% of those programs, but in some colleges it's as high as 80 or 90% of the cost of the programs are paid for by the state. We do need to have the commission there in order to provide that oversight. Otherwise, there really isn't any kind of incentive on the community college level to not duplicate and especially not to terminate ones that again, have consistently low enrollment. And that consistently low enrollment is a very important word in the present language of this bill right now that provides that oversight, but at the same time gives direction to the Community College Commission that they have to have, it has to be consistently low over a long period of time before they can step in.
Senator Von Flatiron, for your second time.
For my second time. Thank you, Mr. President. I hope you realize the commission is made up of educators in some cases, people that have ties with their community college, and business people. They're all going to recognize a business model such as the program that the senator from Natrona County from Casper has talked about, that it takes some time to build it. It is a specialty program. It has federal money. You have all these issues involved. They're not going to say that 8 graduates is not enough. If the industry has participation in it, and 8 graduates is worth a lot to this state, that program's a good program. If it's a liberal arts program and it needs 30 graduates a class, every class, just to sustain itself, then that's what it takes. And if it has 3 or 8 every year, then there's an issue there. So all we did, you got to remember, the word recommend was how this started and how our whole discussion in the task force began. What does it mean? What do they really have for any kind of power? If the politics enter it, shouldn't there be somebody that can stand in there and say, no, that needs to be terminated? If it is duplication, there should be somebody that has the picture, the bigger picture in mind, and says, this is just like the other one 100 miles away, and we can't support very expensive career technical education type programs at 2 campuses, even if you can each graduate 6 or 8 people. Maybe we need to concentrate that one particular program. They have the big picture in mind. I ask for your defeat of this. This is where the whole conversation started with, was the word recommend, and the committee, the governor's task force, said it needs to be stronger than that with somebody with some oversight.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Bebout, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President, and ladies and gentlemen, for my second time. Just a couple of points, and I don't think anybody's arguing that the state has a tremendous investment in our community colleges, as they should have. And obviously, the Community College Commission should be very involved in what happens and what they do. But I would submit to you that looking at several cases in the past, that if you'd have taken this recommendation and had not had the word recommend in there, that they could have killed programs that really worked out. Another program we have at our college in Fremont County is one where we have a culinary school up in Jackson. And you know, if you looked at that from the get-go, you know, the low enrollment, probably pretty expensive, but I think it's really going to work out, and there's a real need in our state. My colleague from Campbell County said it's not a problem. Well, if it's not a problem, why do we want to change it? You know, the other thing I really get back to is the local board of trustees are elected. You know, they stand up in front of the people in those community college districts and they say why I want to be on that board. So they're elected. They have to present their positions. They have to say what they're about, what they're going to do, why they're running. And yet we're going to have an appointed board that tells them what to do. And if this task force gets to the point where we don't think local boards are needed, then I can understand this. But right now we have a local board. They work hard. They're elected. Let's let them do what they were elected to do. I would ask that you support the amendment.
Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 17. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 17 has failed to pass the Senate. Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. I'm a no. My hearing must be getting a little bit faulty in my old age. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 17 has passed. There is a second amendment. Second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 17, the Scott Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 17, second reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy. Page 1, line 3.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this amendment relates to the provision on page 7 lines 13 through 17, where we're adding a requirement on the provisions relating to where the high school students are taking college courses. At least that's my understanding of what that's got to do with. And, Mr. President, I asked about this yesterday in Committee of the Whole and was unconvinced by the answer that this provision, which I think is peripheral to the main purpose of this bill, I was unconvinced that this provision was really needed. It seems to me that we've got a program here with the community colleges and the high schools cooperating, whereby the high school students are taking college courses, getting credit for them. It's a program that's been enormously successful. It's been working quite well, at least in my district, and of course that's always a limitation. We judge things by what goes on in our own districts. But it's worked very well in our district. The academically advanced students have been able to take college courses. A number of the vocational students, the colleges and the high schools, have got together and worked out some articulated programs that have worked very well. And it's working, and I don't really see why we need to add a collaboration with the Department of Education, with uniform prior curricular requirements, academic achievement levels, and national examination performance indicators thrown in there. It seems to me that's just a complication in a program that's working well and doesn't need to be modified. So I brought this amendment, and the effect of the amendment is to remove the new language from the bill. And it's in the process, you remove the whole section from the bill, and you leave the law as it is exactly now with the old language. So I would urge, I've moved the amendment, I would urge the Senate to adopt it.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. President, part of the process that we have created out there with the Department of Education is data gathering. And we have spent, I don't even want to guess how many hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in changing our data gathering devices we have out there with K-12. To bring in the Department of Education just brings some data to the table to help in this post-secondary process we're talking about. It's all part of the study that came out of the study. It's there. It's intended as a recommendation to bring more people to discussion, to discuss what's going to go on when these kids that want to go on and either at the community colleges or UW with post-secondary studies that are doing very well in high school. I don't know what the problem is with collaboration with Department of Education. They're the ones that have all the data out there. They're the ones that bring stuff to the table. So I would urge that you defeat the amendment.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I do have a question on lines 14 through 17. In collaboration with does not give the Department of Education IRNA power over the agreements between the two elected boards. They're just working with them, but the two elected boards still have the final say. Is that right?
Further discussion. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also ask for the defeat of this amendment. The good senator from Laramie County, exactly, that it is just a collaboration and there is no yay or nay. And it says, the way the wording is, that eligibility requirements program participation shall be based upon criteria established by the university or community college in collaboration with the Department of Ed. This we thought fit very well into what had just been created, which is the, I think it's called a P16 group, and that we wanted to make a seamless transition. And so why would you have the high schools running off maybe teaching in some direction that does not fit into what the curriculum is established in the community colleges, or duplicating some subjects or in the manner the subject matter? So we said this looked like a good way to make sure they're all talking on the same page, and let's go on. It doesn't interfere with what is currently going on. In fact, it probably enhances it. So I ask for the defeat of the amendment, and let's move the bill.
Further discussion. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, for my second shot, The other thing I think is really relevant out there is that the Department of Education is very, very involved in the new Hathaway Scholarship Program. And, of course, last year we created the success curriculum. We have created mechanisms out there to monitor how this is working through the Department of Education. I think it's all interrelated, and I just don't understand what the concern is. Still urge that you defeat the amendment.
Further discussion? Further discussion. Senator Scott, for your second time.
Well, Mr. President, it seems to me that the Department of Education can collect and share data entirely independent of this provision. I don't see why that's needed. And again, I think this is peripheral to the main point of the bill. It seems to me that it's adding, when you want to establish one of these programs and the high school and the community college work something out, it's adding an extra level of bureaucracy and complication by requiring that they now have to deal with the State Department of Education. It's one step more toward a centralized system, which I think is a mistake. I don't see why it has anything to do with the Hathaway one way or the other. Mr. President, frankly, this program we're talking about is one of the great successes in our education system. And I think the real operative principle here is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I urge adoption of the amendment.
The question is, on second reading amendment number one, to House Bill 17, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Second reading amendment number one to House Bill 17, I'm sorry, second reading amendment number two to House Bill 17 has failed to pass the Senate. We are back on the bill. House Bill 17, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senator Mockler.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
The floor is yours, Madam Senator.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce the students from Atherby School, Elementary School, which is on the south side of Cheyenne. Their teacher, Kimberly, I can't even read anymore. Kimberly Amon is here with them to show them around the Capitol and to give them a bit of an experience about government. I think it's great. We were just talking about education. So would you please welcome them to the Senate?
Welcome, students, and enjoy your day. House Bill 44, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 44, Crime Victims Compensation, sponsored by Representative Berger.
Senator Fecht.
Mr. President, thank you, sir. Yesterday, during the Committee of the Whole, there were some questions asked that I could not answer. I would like to address those questions today. It centered on the amount of the increase that was being proposed, $50 to $100 on one section or category of violations and $100 to $150 on the other section. And I have good news and I have bad news. 5 years ago, this division had a $1.5 million reserve account. And the reason for that is because of the timing of the payments isn't always standardized. Sometimes they come in on a regular basis, sometimes they don't. So they use that fund to standardize payouts versus pay-ins. Over this five-year period, that $1.5 million has dwindled to $350,000. Now, what they've clearly provided us information on is that they have about $2.1 million per year coming in, and about $2.3 million per year going out. So an increase is clearly justified. The question is, how much should that increase be? Now, the $50 to $100 is that's a significant increase, but it's only on six misdemeanor violations. The $100 to $150 increase is on the bulk of all of the violations that occur, and that we think. Here's the problem. We think that's where the bulk of the money is coming in from. So that would indicate a guess as to the amount of the overall increase is probably something in the neighborhood of 30%. The bad news is we cannot provide statistical evidence of that. The courts simply don't keep it or do not provide it to the Crime Victim Compensation Program. So I guess what I'm suggesting is that we allow this bill to move forward. We allow the increase to take place. It almost certainly will be enough of an increase to not only cover the shortfall every month, but it will probably start reimbursing that reserve account. And then we have provided in our budget funding for a court computer system statewide. And I think it might be an appropriate amendment for the Judiciary Committee, if they were so inclined, to request information at some future date to make sure we start actually getting this information in. But right now, it's simply not available. And if you don't pass this bill, we know there's a shortfall every single month, and they're going to run out of money. So I would ask for your favorable consideration on the bill as we proceed.
House Bill 44, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 48, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 48, State Loan and Investment Board Loan, sponsored by Representative Berger.
House Bill 48, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 57, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 57, Emergency Powers, Right to Bear Arms, sponsored by Representative Yeagie.
House Bill 57, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 98, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 98, Speech Pathologist Licensing, sponsored by Representative Ken Escobel.
We do have an amendment, second reading amendment number one, to House Bill 98, the Scott Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 98, second reading amendment number one, to engross copies, page one, line three.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this amendment deals with a couple of the issues that we discussed in the Committee of the Whole, and I'll say my co-sponsor has been in contact with the proponents of this bill, and what we're trying to do is get it so it actually does exactly what they wanted it to do. We're looking at the provision on page 2, lines 4 through 9, that were questioned and was alleged to be a fencing provision yesterday. First thing we do is we go into that first sentence and put a period after audiologist and after means, we say, is allowed. So the provision of these services through telephonic, electronic means is allowed. There was some question about that before. The proponents wanted that cleared up, and by making that a simple sentence, we do that. Then we delete the rest of that sentence and replace it by the language you see in the amendment, so that when a person outside Wyoming provides a consultation in Wyoming, electronically, telephonically, etc., that is clearly allowed, provided they're duly licensed in their home jurisdiction. And we were told that is a very common practice, and the effect of the language we're putting in makes it very clear that that is allowed. So that's what we do to that provision. I would submit to you that fixes it so that that provision is clearly not a fencing provision. The second thing is with regard to this possess at least a master's degree or its equivalent, we restore the old or its equivalent language so we don't change the law. We frankly don't think that they use that anymore or its equivalent, but it conceivably it could be useful, so we leave the law exactly as it is now. We did find out that there are within the school system some speech pathologists who do not have a master's degree, but who have a lot of experience in continuing education. They are licensed not through this licensing board, but through the PTSB. And so they're permitted there within the school system. And that's That's where they practice, and it is perfectly legal. And there was a mention of a constituent who was in exactly that situation. That's how it works. She's legal. She's licensed through the PTSB. She can continue to do exactly what she's been doing. She isn't affected by this law. So that's what the amendment does. I think it solves the concern that was raised, and it leaves the law in that respect exactly as it is right now.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I think the amendment's helpful, but I think it doesn't get to the root of the problem. My concerns yesterday were that this was indeed a fencing bill that ultimately may have a negative effect on what people are actually trying to do. And I would refer to, if you look at the entire bill, it's not in the bill, and this amendment doesn't fix the problem that exists in the law. What the law says, it defines audiology, is found in 33.103.102, and there's a long list of things in there that are considered and we'll just respect to audiology, because we know it's a very similar list for speech pathology. But it's principles, means the application of principles, methods, procedures of measurements, testing, evaluation, production, consultation, counseling, instruction, habilitation, rehabilitation related to hearing disorders of hearing for the purpose of evaluating, identifying, preventing, ameliorating, or modifying such disorders and conditions in individuals or groups of individuals. And that's a very broad term. Obviously, we may be violating those principles right now. Just talking about allergy as you read the broad term. But then you go to B, which also the bill doesn't, nor this amendment addresses. You go to 33.103.103b, which is not included in this bill, but is very relevant and germane to the discussion, says, no person shall practice or represent himself as a speech pathologist or an audiologist unless licensed pursuant to this act. And so you can't consult, counsel, instruct, or even help with evaluation unless you're licensed under this act, which I would interpret to be licensed in the state of Wyoming. And so what you've got when you get to the amendment is it allows telecommunication with respect to consulting, but you've got the amendment's created an inconsistency in the bill that says you can consult by telephone, but you still have to be licensed under the act. And the fence is still there, and the fence is still there, and the amendment doesn't fix it. So you can vote it up or vote it down, but it's not fixing the problem in the bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. In listening to the explanation offered by the movement of the amendment, the explanation that someone can practice within the confines of this act if they're authorized by the Professional Teacher Standards Board, I'd like more discussion on that. I mean, I don't see it. Well, maybe there is some provision that allows the Professional Teaching Standards Board to make an exception to this, but this is regulated by the Board of Examiners of Speech Pathology and Audiology. I would think they're the only ones who could offer up an exception unless there's something in the statute that is or isn't. Okay.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, the Professional Teacher Standards Board is the one that provides certification and licensure for speech pathologists in our school systems and not this particular board. You know, Mr. President, I've been listening for a couple of days now, the use of this word fencing, and I have to admit it's starting to get to me a little bit. Let's talk about that for a second. And the folks who need speech-language pathology intervention or audiologists can be anyone who was born a couple days old to someone who's had a stroke at 80 years of age. And in many of those instances, having somebody who's a professional who really knows what they're doing and is understanding of the most current approaches and practices can make a huge difference on a person's life. That's why we've licensed these folks for over 30 years. Is because what they do is very important to the people throughout the state of Wyoming. And I imagine folks who are licensed today in various professions and say, for instance, pick out of the blue here, attorneys. are probably licensed a lot different today than they were 100 years ago. In fact, there's probably 30 of us right here, if we didn't have that licensure, probably feels that we're attorneys, right, after dealing with these laws for 30 years. But we wouldn't be good practicing attorneys. Same thing with physicians and nurses and so on and so forth. So this is an important bill because it ensures that people who are licensed in the state of Wyoming that you can go to can be guaranteed to help you out. Now, with regard specifically to the amendment here, it does get at the point that it was trying to make, and that is if a professional here contacts a professional in another state, that does not pertain to licensure and that they go ahead and do it. If someone from out of state is not licensed and is offering that speech language pathology or audiology in Wyoming and passing themselves as a professional, they do need to be licensed. And they have had to be licensed for 30 years. It's under 33-33-303, subsection B. Okay, that hasn't changed with this bill. It hasn't changed in 30 years. They still need to be licensed if they're coming from out of state and trying to pass themselves off here as an SLP or an audiologist.
Senator Mockler.
You know, just as a point of interest for everybody about fencing and about how we educate people in this state, we still have a law on the books that says you actually don't have to go to 3 years of law school, that you can go to 1 year of law school and then study with an attorney or study with a judge and still become an attorney, or you can go to 2 years of law school and do the same mentoring program. So for professions that think they're totally professional and that they have to have their full degree and that no one else can come in, it is kind of interesting that there are always these little exceptions. And I would bet that everyone out there that is a lawyer is probably not too happy with the fact that all of the rest of us can't be with only 1 year of law school.
Senator Nicholas, do you want your turn before Senator Ross gets his turn, or how do we do this? Senator Nicholas.
I was just going to point out that my grandfather practiced for 40 years after, or actually 75 years after only doing 1 year of law school, did actually okay.
Okay.
Senator Perkins, for your second time.
I think we're still on the amendment, aren't we, Mr. President?
I think so.
Okay.
Senator Perkins.
And quite frankly, I had a partner who actually qualified to practice law and had her a former partner and did very well. And I think that goes right back to the point in this bill, is you don't have to have a degree. And when you go back to this, specifically to this amendment, I mean, this is great. We ought to be enhancing telecommunications. We ought to be doing telemedicine. We ought to be doing those things that advance and help. And indeed, when you look at the literature that was provided with this from the Wyoming Board of Speech Pathology that was handed out to everyone, Mr. President, it tells us that it says on the top of the second page, it says there is a nationwide shortage of speech pathologists and audiologists. And so here we are, we're looking for people to help. We're looking for people. We have a shortage, but yet we're going to make it more difficult. And so the amendment carves out a kind of a telephonic communication that doesn't solve another inconsistency in the bill. Then you have the issue where apparently you don't have to. It's good enough. You can be good enough in our schools with a bachelor's degree or a master's degree. You're good enough to help our kids in our schools, but you can't help the rest of the general population. We're being asked in here to look at this and say, you know, the advances in medicine, the advances in the field are technologically advanced, and you've got to have this advanced degree. That may be well and good, but we're saying that the master's degrees don't have that advance. The amendment, like I say, the amendment helps, but it doesn't cure the problem. I'd vote for the amendment if I intend to, but it doesn't cure the problem that's in the bill.
Further discussion. Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a couple questions, I think this amendment does help, and I am in support of the amendment, but some of the issues coming up talking about the amendment I'd like to address. The fencing issue. I'd like to know who we are supposed to be fencing out, because speech pathologists work with health-related conditions. They work with individuals who have cerebral palsy, individuals who have cleft palate, individuals who have had a stroke, traumatic or acquired brain injuries, and a host of other issues. And there are kind of two venues, I guess, where speech pathologists work. One is in the school. In the school, you're working with articulation problems. You're working with sometimes, as not as frequently as before, stuttering problems and language problems. Language problems are underneath success in school. If you don't have a good language base, you don't learn to read, you don't understand what you read, and you cannot express your ideas. Nor can you analyze or do any of those higher level critical thinking skills that we want students to have unless they have a good language base. That's what your speech therapists in schools do. And they can work with your developmentally disabled students or students with reading problems or students who simply have an artic problem. And for there, if you have a master's level who are supervising those folks, you can have them practice in the schools and they do okay. Outside of the schools, if you're in kind of a private practice or you're associated with a hospital, you are dealing with medical issues. And there are important windows when you deal with traumatic brain injury or if you're dealing with a stroke victim. And there are important windows and important strategies and important things that you have to know about anatomy, medicine, and everything else so that you do no harm to that individual and that they have the maximum opportunity to regain whatever it is they've lost. You need to know brain anatomy, you need to know the brain functionings, and you need to know how to reprogram some of those paths that those messages travel in the brain. So it is very sophisticated, and you need a lot of knowledge, and they do need to be licensed because they can do harm and they can do long-term harm to an individual. To just give you an example, I had a client who was about 5 years old one time, went to a person who thought they knew what they were doing. That individual advised that mother that that child would never speak. Well, that child did quite okay articulating her wedding vows later on. And that was wrong, and it was an inexperienced, unlicensed person who gave that mother that kind of advice. So this does matter. It matters a lot to those people who are going and seeking out these services. So I stand in support of this amendment, and I stand in support of the bill.
Further discussion. Further discussion. Senator Scott, for your second time.
Well, Mr. President, and I will seek to confine my remarks to items relevant to the amendment, and we've had a good deal of discussion on the bill, and I will seek recognition after we've disposed of the amendment to answer some of those questions. There was a question that's relevant to the amendment with regard to the practice in the schools, because that was related to the issue with the language we're restoring. And if you look at 33104A, paragraph triple I, there is a specific exemption in there. Schools are licensed through the PTSB, so they are not affected in any way by this bill. Given that, I still think it's worthwhile restoring that old language so that its master's degree are equivalent, and we haven't changed that. The rest of the comments, some of them are on the, many of them are on the bill. The amendment just makes it very clear that when we're talking about the electronic means, we're clarifying that that can be used within the state. We're clarifying that somebody from outside the state that's duly licensed in their own jurisdiction can provide a consultation with Wyoming. Both of those practices are routinely occurring, and there's some question as to whether they're properly legal. If this amendment's adopted and the bill passes, there'll be no question about that anymore. That's what the amendment does, and I would urge adoption of the amendment.
Question is, on second reading, amendment number one to House Bill 98, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Second reading, amendment number one to House Bill 98 does pass the Senate. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, back on the bill, a number of the comments we had related basically to the bill. And yes, it may be unfortunate that the bill didn't tear down what's perceived to be a fence in the existing statute, but it didn't, frankly, it didn't deal with that one way or the other. It left the existing statute alone. And I don't know whether it would be a constitutional amendment to go in and change that provision or not. It would be something we'd have to think about. The bill does repeal an existing exemption, which is 3333-104A-VII, which currently allows somebody who's not licensed to come in for no more than 5 days in a calendar year in cooperation with a speech pathologist or audiologist licensed under this act. If you're concerned about fencing, you might take a look at that particular repealer. But basically, we don't deal, and the bill does not affect one way or the other, the requirements that to do things that are listed as speech pathology or audiology that you have to be licensed. That's the standard fencing type provision. It is not affected by this bill one way or the other. The bill does go toward the national standard of a doctor's degree in audiology, but we put a big exception in the standing committee amendment that until anyone who gets a master's degree before 2012, we'll continue to license them here in Wyoming, and we'll license them anew, even though other states may not. And that's an exception. If you want to make a bigger exception, have at it. I might even support you. But remember that the central purpose of this bill is to update some of those things to allow a provisional licensure, because that is giving us trouble. The lack of that is giving us trouble in letting speech pathologists who don't quite make the requirements practice for a year or two while they meet the requirements. That will enhance our ability to recruit the speech pathologists who are in shortage. The audiologists in Wyoming are not currently in shortage. We may be the only health profession we've got that's not got a shortage. But that's the way it is in Wyoming right now. So I would urge you to adopt the bill, and if you have some questions, want to think that we can use the bill as a vehicle to tear the fence down a little bit, have at it in third reading. Do pay attention to the constitutional requirement about how much we can change a bill.
We are back on the bill. House Bill 98, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 109, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 109, Telecommunications Switched Access, sponsored by Representative Illoway.
We do have some amendments. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 109, the Meyer Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 109, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 3.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'm going to withdraw this amendment this time. There's a little concern that we don't have the wording quite down right. We wanted to make sure that this only dealt with companies with lines that had less than 20,000. But as it's worked in there, I think I need to go back with the with our staff and with the good chairman of corporations and make sure that it does say what it was meant to say. However, I did pass out a chart, Mr. Chairman. It has all the different telephone companies on it. I'd like everybody to take a look at that to see what we're really talking about. At the end of the day, what we were trying to do was make it for companies less than 20,000. And you can see there's one big company that has 80% of the lines. and everybody else is under that. Mr. President, a lot of these companies are already covered under the current statute. They're above 3 cents a minute. They're allowed to go down. This amendment, properly drafted, would only take care of one, two, three companies, perhaps four, if there's a reversal on the Embark case. And then at the end of the day, it's only 0.004 cents per minute. It's a very, very small amount, whether this amendment passes or doesn't pass, or whether the bill passes or doesn't pass. But this, I think, Mr. President, we'll bring it back on third. It's really a question of fairness to see whether companies can be treated like in like circumstances. And at this time, I'd ask the amendment be withdrawn.
Hearing no objection, second reading amendment number one to House Bill 109 is withdrawn. We do have another amendment. Second reading amendment number two to House Bill 109, the case amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 109, second reading amendment number two to engross copy, page 2, line 5.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number two to House Bill 109. I listened to my good colleagues talk yesterday about a delayed enactment date, you know, to have a not be effective immediately. And the concern that was expressed was that we would be interfering with a pending case that's been decided by the PSC based on current law. And I took that to heart, Mr. President. I think that's normally what happens in legislation anyway, but just to make it absolutely clear, I bring this with an olive branch to say that this subsection shall not apply retroactively. That's the amendment.
Further discussion on second reading amendment number one to House Bill 109. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I do support this amendment. I am still concerned, Mr. President, that this amendment doesn't necessarily get the job done. We may come back on third reading if we can figure out a way to make sure we've got it done.
The question is, on second reading amendment number two to House Bill 109, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Second reading amendment number two to House Bill 109 does pass the Senate. We are back on the bill. House Bill 109 having been read two separate times. The question is, let me start again. House Bill 109 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 134, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 134, School District Immunity and Liability Insurance, sponsored by Representative Stubnow.
House Bill 134, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Joint Resolution Number 1, second reading of the joint resolution.
House Joint Resolution Number 1, Initiative and Referendum Requirements, sponsored by Representative Brown.
House Joint Resolution Number 1, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, consent list today is House Bill 6, State Veterans Museum, House Bill 8, Election Code Revisions, House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation, House Bill 67, Intertribal Education and Community Center, House Bill 77, Tuition, Dependents of Disabled Firefighters and EMTs, 2, House Bill 88, Omnibus Water Bill Planning,
House Bill 90, Carbon Capture and Sequestration. House Bill 91, Streamlined Sales and Use Tax. House Bill 122, Game Warden Enforcement of Littering Provisions.
House Bill 6, State Veterans Museum. House Bill 8, Election Code Revisions. House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation. House Bill 67, Intertribal Education and Community Center. House Bill 77, Tuition, Dependents of Disabled Firefighters and EMTs 2. House Bill 88, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. House Bill 90, Carbon Capture and Sequestration. House Bill 91, Streamlined Sales and Use Tax. And House Bill 122, Game Wardens, Enforcement of Littering Provisions, are all on the consent list. Is there any bills that anyone would like removed from the consent list? Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, I'd like House Bill 67 to be removed from the consent list, please.
House Bill 67, Intertribal Education and Community Center, is removed from the consent list. Are there any other bills that any senator would like removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 6, State Veterans Museum. House Bill 8, Election Code Revisions. House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation. House Bill 77, Tuition, Dependents of Disabled Firefighters and EMTs 2. House Bill 88, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. House Bill 90, Carbon Capture and Sequestration. House Bill 91, Streamlined Sales and Use Tax. And House Bill 122, Game Wardens, Enforcement of Littering Provisions. Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman, excused. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Vecht?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Pastert?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson? Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Mockler,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
excused.
Basie's excused, Von Flatern,
aye.
And President Schiffer.
Aye.
On the consent list, 28 ayes, 2 excused. House Bill 6, are there any changes? Johnson, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 6, 23 ayes, 5 noes, 2 excused. House Bill 8, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 8, 28 ayes, 2 excused. House Bill 54, are there any changes?
Meyer,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 54, 27 ayes, 1 no, 1 or 2 excused. House Bill 77, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 77, 28 ayes, 2 excused. House Bill 88, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 88, 28 ayes, 2 excused. House Bill 90, are there any changes? Mockler, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 90, 27 ayes, 1 no, 2 excused. House Bill 91, are there any changes? Jennings, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 91, 25 ayes, 3 noes, 2 excused. House Bill 122, are there any changes? Geis, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 122, 25 ayes, 3 noes, 2 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Wyoming Senate, House Bill 6, State Veterans Museum, House Bill 8, Election Code Revisions, House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation, House Bill 77, Tuition, Dependents of Disabled Firefighters and EMTs 2, House Bill 88, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, House Bill 90, Carbon Capture and Sequestration, House Bill 91, Streamlined Sales and Use Tax, and House Bill 122, Game Wardens, Enforcement of Littering Provisions, have all passed the Senate. House Bill 67, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 67, Intertribal Education and Community Center, sponsored by the Tribal Relations Committee, and Act relating to education, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Rising on and against this bill, and would encourage the body to consider a couple things today as they vote for this bill. First of all, in Senate File 1, in the budget bill, there was a budget amendment that this body passed that would allow $155 million to be used for construction of various buildings, including some dormitories, but also some training, development, and workforce. Actually, it wasn't any dormitories in this. There were a number of science buildings, application science technical buildings. In Eastern Wyoming College, there was a Center for Excellence. At Casper College, there was a Center for Training and Development. At CWC, there was a building for Allied Health. At LCCC, there was a building for performance, the Fine Arts Complex. At Northwestern Community College, there were three buildings, Applied Sciences Technology, Center for Creative Economics, and a science building. All three of those, when they went to the budget, all three of those are no longer in the budget. There was an approval from this body that there could be up to $155 million of other funds be used for the construction of those projects. The other body was against that, voted against every one of those, and ultimately that went away in the budget committee. What you have before you in House 67 is, in my mind, a significant inconsistency. It's another, an additional, not just $1.1 million, but an additional $1 million to bring up to $2.2 million the construction of a facility at Eastern Wyoming Community Central Wyoming Community College. It just seems to me that this is incredibly inconsistent to vote against the construction of those while at the same time passing through the construction of another one on a separate bill. And for those, plus the other reasons, when you look at it, that there was at some time ago already 1.1 other significant other monies from other sources are out there, have been raised for this, but ultimately back for another 1.1, but yet it seems an inconsistent position to yank the rug out from a number of other community colleges and let this facility go forward. And so I would urge you to vote no on this bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess, folks, when you make your decision with respect to this bill, I'd urge you to look at the merits of the bill, the merits of what's going to happen, and not with respect to amendments that may have failed, things that got lost, disappointment you may have because items didn't make it in the budget. You know, I've been sitting, I think, on appropriations, it seems like yesterday, but about 5 years, and I can go back and I can list almost for every community here, 1 year somebody got something. A few years ago, Laramie County got the in-car facility, $20 million earmarked to Cheyenne. 1 year would be the they've got half of their College of Nursing funded, even though they had a bond issue already approved, $10 million. 1 year it was a dormitory over in Eastern, got burned down or mold, and there was a winter that year. 1 year it could be your community and your community. Is it inconsistent? You bet it is. It is inconsistent. If you think that appropriations is a science, if you think that 1 year there's not a little pork for somebody and somebody else doesn't get it, fair enough. But I'll remind you, we are now at the end of the day, and we have fully accommodated in the budget the dollars. It's balanced. These are one-time funds. And now you have to, after you get to this point, you have to take a step back. And I do. I didn't like this appropriation because it took money from the university that I worked hard to get for classrooms on campus 2 years ago. And I felt like, you know, that's not what I was fighting for. But, you know, they came back and they made a good statement. You may not like it because you lost something in the budget process. But even I have to do it. You advocate against things. At some point, you got to take a step back, and where we're at the end of the game, and with all these bills due, you have to say, is Wyoming going to be a better place? And the question is they've earned it. They've come all this way. It's built in the profile. Arguments that you may have made 3 readings ago are no longer valid. Now I'd urge you, does it make Wyoming a better place? And will you be more proud when you go to Riverton because they have this facility? If the answer is no, then fair enough, vote against it. But don't do it because you didn't get something in the budget that you didn't like, because you're always going to have that sense of fairness. And with these community colleges, you know, if as an outsider looking in, 1 year one college is a winner, the next year another college is a winner, so what? We all like our community colleges, and on balance, we want to treat them all well and fairly. And part of being fair is that as resources come and go, some institutions get it, some don't.
The question is, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall House Bill 67 pass the Senate? Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman excused. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Vecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
Aye.
J- Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Mockler.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie excused. Von Flatern.
No.
President Schiffer.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 20 ayes, 8 noes, 2 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Wyoming Senate, House Bill 67 does pass the Senate. Oh, boy. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President,
I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
The motion is that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We will reserve ourselves under the careful leadership of Senator Landon, Committee of the Whole.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration. House Bill 3.
I need the bill.
Correction, House Bill 53. If the clerk would please read the bill.
House Bill 53, Garnishees Administrative Fees, sponsored by Representative Dockstader, an act relating to garnishment of wages. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Allman, Burns, Cole, Massey, excuse Senator Mockler, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 53, Garnishees Administrative Fees. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is in those cases where people's wages are being garnished from them, quite often that puts a burden, especially on small business, the administrative fees of having to pull that out. What this bill does is it allows those businesses to charge an extra $10 to the garnishee, the person whose wages they are garnishing, for the expense of doing that. Now, they don't have to charge that fee. It's totally up to them. But I and the sponsors seem to think this is a fair way to go about it. This bill was asked for by the Small Business Federation. I have a Committee of the Whole amendment, if I could read that in at this time, please.
Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 53, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line
17. Let me read that in again. House Bill 53, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 17.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 53. Mr. Chairman, there are some cases, in primarily where You've got people who are in prison who are still getting their wages garnished, and it's only just a few dollars. In that case, you've got a problem where this fee would be would surpass what the garnishment was or take away all the garnishment at that time. So what this amendment does, and it has the agreement of the sponsor, is it restricts the garnishment, the fee, to no more than one quarter of the garnishment. So in other words, it can't go up to $10 until the garnishment is at least $40. In a lot of cases, there are wages being garnished all over the state to do with child support, and that in many cases is either $200, $400, right along those amounts. So, Mr. Chairman, it's a very simple concept, and I'd be glad to take any questions.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Sessions?
Mr. Chairman, just a question. When you garnish a person's wages for child support or any other thing, I have a problem because you're taking away, you usually get your wages garnished because you can't pay your bills. Let's just face it. You have a problem paying your bills. You're not just choosing not to pay them. Maybe in the case of child support, you are. But most of the other time, it's because you can't pay your bills. So one more time, we're going to charge a fee that, in addition to taking the money from the person's check, which I think it should be done when they owe it, then why charge? I think it's very blatantly unfair to charge $10. What do you have to do? Somebody tell me what you have to do to garnish a person's wages so I can understand how onerous this is to someone to do this. Thank you.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, garnishing somebody's wages is actually quite a ponderous step to go through, and you have to go through your county government to do so. You have to get a court order to do so, it's through a court order. Most often, garnishment comes when the person who owes the money doesn't pay. Just doesn't pay it. This also can serve as reduce the requirement for garnishments. Somebody is getting garnished, and they suddenly see it's costing them another $10 just for that garnishment, because otherwise it costs them nothing. They're getting their paycheck garnished. They can either write the check that they owe, let's say, to the ex-wife or for the child support, or they just like to get the money garnished, taken out of their paycheck ahead of time. Frankly, it's kind of a convenience for them at this point. And it is an inconvenience for their employer. When somebody who's getting garnished starts seeing that extra $10, then they have to start calculating, is it worth it? Is the $10 worth it for the convenience of having it taken out of my paycheck first, or do I just start writing out the check instead and saving myself the $10? That's one of the side benefits, I think, of this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Point of order. Is the discussion confined to the amendment at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the point is well taken. And while we're on the amendment, I've gone ahead and moved the amendment, and that is the amendment that restricts it to only one quarter of the garnishment, and I'll take any questions on the amendment at this point. Then we go back on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Any other discussion on the amendment? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Jennings?
Mr. Chairman, going back now to the previous discussion, what does it really take? In a small business, it takes bookkeeper time. Bookkeeper's got to go in and take time out of the business to process this money and this garnishment, and then you got to take it and send it in, and then you got to follow through, and then every once in a while you get a call, and did you do it? Yes, we did. And so it's in a lot of cases just that one more step that we put on private business that we're processing for somebody else. And I'm not sure, maybe one of the attorneys that are a little more familiar with this, but I also believe that if we get a garnishment on one of our employees, I don't think we can fire them for it. I think we have to keep them, if I remember right, we have to keep them on the payroll. So you get added to your bookkeeping costs, and then you say, well, you can't have anything against the employee for doing it. So I think this $10, and I understand it may be coming out of some place it's supposed to go, but if you're going to impose this bookkeeping chore on a small business, you ought to pay for it.
Senator Nicholas. I would like to respond to that, but then I had a question. With respect to small businesses, I mean, most people here have small businesses. We all hire employees. And, you know, frankly, when you hire employees, you build it into their salaries, and there's a cost involved to employees. And one of the things happens on occasion, you have an employee that has financial issues and or emotional issues, all kinds of things you deal with. That's just part of being an employer. And $10 is wouldn't begin to cover the cost of your bookkeeper and things like that. It's just built in the cost of the business in the response to that. And, you know, I sort of say get over it. That's what happens when you hire employees. With respect to the bill, what I wonder about is that the unintended consequences, and that is more of a question, is I understand it. The employer, you get to take the $10 out. It's really not your problem then who suffers the loss of the $10. If the judgment provides and if they can collect it from the debtor, then the debtor, the person that owes the money, who's being withheld, he'll pay it. But if not, it's $10 less to somebody that needs it because they either have to go back in and get their judgment adjusted, they have to go back to court and get it added in, or they have to have the foresight to know that it's added in, or that to have the judgment provide together with this $10 fee, and then you continue to collect until you get your fees too. And it seems to me that there is a total cost out there that maybe it's just simply not warranted, and maybe is. And I know that there are advocates out there that that are insisting that small businesses are getting penalized, but once again, I'd say there's just a certain burden that comes with employing people, and this is one of those.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the intent of the bill, and maybe it's not clear, and I'd be glad to bring a second reading amendment on that, is that the $10 is in addition to the money that's already owed. So it's going to cost the garnishee an extra $10 to have that money garnished from their paycheck. Again, then that becomes a calculation that they can make. Is it worth the $10 to have it garnished, or should I start going ahead and writing a check for this myself? And I would be glad to bring a second reading amendment to make it clear that it's at the cost of the garnishee, not to the cost of the person, say the mother who the money is owed to.
Senator Mockler.
I have one concern, and that is, what if you get paid every week and they're garnishing part of your wage every single week? Then you'll be paying $40 a month for this, and that's probably more than they're garnishing. And I think that you have to set different kinds of limits for things like that. A lot of people get one paycheck a month. Some get two paychecks a month. Some get four paychecks a month. And if you're getting four paychecks a month, you can do the math about how much that would cost in a year's time to have this done. So I think that's one of the flaws in this bill. You really do have to think long-term what it will do to the individual.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, let's keep in mind what we're talking about here. We're talking about somebody who owes money. They owe an ongoing debt to somebody. Either it's portion of a big lump sum or it's an ongoing debt for something like child support. In most cases, the vast majority of cases, garnishment only happens when the person who owes the money has stopped paying it themselves. And in many cases, it's because it's more convenient for them to just have it taken from their paycheck ahead of time, like withholding, like FICA. It's an inconvenience for the boss. It's frankly, it's an inconvenience for the person receiving the money too, because you don't receive the money till a month or two down the line after the fact. And if you're living paycheck to paycheck, or your mother, $200 or $400 a month is really not much money. It's a great inconvenience for the person. I've had employees who were garnished that I had to garnish for, and I've garnished people. It's not something you go through voluntarily. And in this case, the person you're inconveniencing, or the party you're inconveniencing right now, is the employer. The employer is having to pay all this extra money, get themselves involved in this dispute between these two people, and they're having to pay for it. All this bill does is rectify that by saying, by this relatively token amount. In answer to the first point made by the good senator from Laramie County, if that person's getting paid once a week and they're getting dinged for $10 a month, you can bet they may start reconsidering and maybe start writing out the check themselves.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, as I read the bill, that the extra $10 will come out of the wages that the employee would otherwise get, unless you've raised it so much, unless the garnishments are so much, that you hit some limits, and we put some limits on how much you can garnish so that we don't take everything and leave somebody unable to support themselves because of the degree of garnishment. And so the business with this $10 fee will have to figure out which category they're in as to where the $10 comes from. And my question is twofold. One, is that a correct understanding of the bill? And second, what percentage of them is it going to come out of the fee that the wages that the employee was otherwise going to get, and what percentage is it going to come out of the amount that the person that's owed the money that caused the garnishment to happen is going to get?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just a little bit about garnishment first. No person can be garnished more than 25% of their paycheck. That's already in statute, and that's actually where I got the 25% that went into the amendment. The intent, and as I said, I'll bring an amendment on second reading and make this clear, is that the money comes entirely out of the garnishee, the person who owes the money. The recipient of the garnishment pays nothing. It makes no difference to them whatsoever. They get the same amount of money they were getting otherwise. The person whose wages are getting garnished pays 100% of that $10 or that 25% of the garnishment, whichever is less. So it becomes their choice. Do they want to continue paying that $10 per paycheck, or do they want to start making those payments on the debt they owe?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I will admit, you know, we have a small business, so we know something about this. We've seen child support, and we've dealt with it. And I will admit that my brother does the bookkeeping, so he has to deal with it, and it's not my problem. And that may affect my attitude. But it does strike me that most people that get one of these, either they're not paying a child support or, more likely, they're in some kind of financial difficulties. And basically what this bill is a bill to kick them while they're down.
Senator Sessions.
I guess I keep reading this part on the top of page 2, and it says, if the addition of this fee causes the total amount withheld to exceed the restrictions imposed by subsection B of this section, the fee shall be deducted from the amount withheld. So that says to me that if in a child support case, the addition of the $10, if they're garnishing the full 25% that is allowed, then this says the fee shall be deducted from the amount withheld. So you take $10 off that amount. Is that correct, what we're doing?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, that may be the case. I had not read it that way, but now that I look at it with fresh eyes, that may be the case. If it is, I would like to bring I would like to correct that as part of a second reading amendment on it. The person to who the money is owed should not be suffering at all because of that, and that's the intent of this bill.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you.
I've had a lot of experience with garnishments both in and out, and I've had a lot of experience with administrating payroll. It would appear to me that the $10 for me as an administrator of a payroll is more difficult to deal with than not charging it at all. That is an income. If we deduct it from the amount of garnishee, then you detest that with the district court about those fees and shorting them for that reason. The bill also says may. I would hope that the employers would take a hard look at how much it actually costs them to do that in response to a benefit of the employee. The other day I mentioned, and I did a bad thing, I criticized some of my loyal and hardworking employees about not being able to sign the check properly. And I apologize for that, and I have to defend them to the point that most of the people that have been garnished are trying hard. They do have a job. The people that they owe have found them, and they are trying to pay it off that bill. It would appear to me that as an administrator of a payroll, I'm not sure that this bill is necessary in my case.
Senator Case.
I got about 85 employees, and payroll is a nightmare. It is always a nightmare. And I'm in the restaurant business, and sometimes that's kind of a transitional business, I might say. I've certainly done a lot of transition in my life over that business. But we have new employees all the time. And, you know, we'll hire somebody, you think they're pretty good, they interview well, you get them done, and then pretty soon the state of Nebraska starts finding out that they're there, and then you get a deal from the state of Washington, and then you get the state of this, and then, you know, so you got to take care of that. We make out checks to the employee, and then we make out checks to the state of Washington, to the state of Nebraska, and all this. And we like Ed. He's a great employee. He actually comes every day. We want to keep him. We're doing all this. And we're thinking about Ed's kids, where this money's going, and we're thinking, well, at least he's got a job. We're happy to do this because we're getting Ed's kids, and maybe finally he's going to get this paid off. If you let me collect $10 out of Ed's, I will never, ever take that money. Because we go and we figure out the maximum on every garnishment, and we say, well, they made this much, and you can do this, and we got to get his kids paid. This is how much we can take. I'm not going to take $10 from Ed's kids. Even if it does probably go through the state to the kids, I would never do that. If they have a debt, I'm so glad they're working. And if it gets to be such a hassle for them, bye. They just say bye, and they go across the street, and they work for the restaurant across the street, and it'll take 2 months for Washington and Nebraska and the car they defaulted on to catch up with them, and then that employer can have all that. And maybe they'll take the $10, but I don't think they will. I don't like this bill.
Senator Nicholas.
The tall senator from Natrona County was pointing out, when you prepare a writ of garnishment, it's actually fairly complicated. You got to go back and look at what the federal guarantees are for take-home wages and the statutory. You combine them. You send out your notice and say, we want our judgments for $2,000, but the only amount we can take out of a wage is pursuant to a formula. Here's the formula. And when you're garnishing it, you want as much as you can. So what the law is telling you, if I garnish as much as I can of the wages, then I think you have to take it out of the recipient's share. You can't take it out of the garnishee's because he's guaranteed that right. And if it is a tail end, then is the you're below that guaranteed amount, then the consequences are different. Then you could start adding it on to as an extra tax to the employee. And if you're going to be making that decision whether you could add it on to as an extra fee and charge it to the employee in a sense versus take it out of the recipient's share, good luck, because we train lawyers a lot of time to figure out, make sure they're not in violation of those federal statutes, because there are consequences to taking too much money. And believe me, it's going to take you more than $10 to figure out whether you can add it on or deduct it. But if you deduct it to pay your fee, which, as I understand, is provided, the recipient's the loser and not the garnishee, and maybe she gets it on the he or she gets it on the tail end, but maybe by that time they don't have a job. So it is more complicated than you might think.
Senator Cooper.
You know, I consider this, fellow senators, as a pay me now or pay me later bill, because what'll happen is, if you continue to do this, and I know businesses do it, they just pass this cost on. They pass it on to you or to us as consumers of their service or their products. And you know, another thing is too, you have to understand, some companies hire collection agencies to collect their money. And you can imagine what they charge. It isn't $10, I can guarantee you that. Sometimes it's as high as 50% of the cost. And these people, I think, are, in many cases, not all cases, but a lot of times, they're on the run. I can tell you, having been in the construction business and having hundreds and hundreds of employees work for me over the years, some of these folks got it figured out. They figure it takes 90 days for the court to catch up with them. And by golly, they're working for you 90 days, and they're gone, because about the 90th day, here comes the sheriff's deputy with the service order for you to take out that money out of their paycheck. And it's kind of an interesting game that some of these folks play. So believe me, there's a lot of them out there that have this game figured out about as far as being able to collect them, take the money out of their paycheck, because they know how the system works. So pay me now or pay me later. I'm on and for the bill.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 53, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Having failed, standing division vote.
Division
has been called for. All those in favor, please rise.
Oh, it's a businessman.
All those opposed, please rise. Having failed a standing division vote, pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A, House Bill 53 is deemed indefinitely postponed. Roll call. Having failed a standing division vote, my apologies, a roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will take roll.
Allman excused. Bebout? Burns? Case? Coe? Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
No.
Becht?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie excused. Von Flateren?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 6 ayes, 22 noes, and 2 excused.
My thanks to the Chief Clerk. House Bill 53, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Next bill for our consideration, House Bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move
to beg leave. I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
Sorry about that.
You know, I've never seen the first time you sit down in the chair, have a bill go down. That's a tough way to start out. You did fine. Reports from standing committees.
February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 82, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 85, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, and Townsend, excuse Senator Peterson, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 43, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 74, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Townsend, and Peterson. Senator Peterson excused. Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 113, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Job, Nicholas, and Townsend, Senator Meyer, excuse Senator Peterson, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 29th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 52, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears this desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m.
The motion is the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m. Are there announcements? Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Transportation Committee number eight will be doing a phone interview of Sandra McCormick immediately after lunch recess here in S-14. And any that would like to sit in and observe, we'd appreciate it.
Senator, is that interview during the lunch recess or at 2?
Mr. President, immediately upon recess.
Immediately upon recess, okay. Great. Sounds fun. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number three will meet next Tuesday, 20 minutes after the noon recess up in S-16, in order to consider discussion of the interim topics.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, before my message, Senator Burns and I were sort of enjoying the message you get with your check, on account of all the good work from the senator from Tall Center from Casper, you can get your free colonoscopy today, I think. but I do have a message. Yeah, that's, yeah. Senator Byrd said you could perform him if you'd like at half the price. Mr. President, with respect to re-referrals, we're going to start hearing them at 1 o'clock. I know that many of you have conflicts, and we will, if we determine we've got enough information from the people there, we'll move through them. If we feel like we need more information, we will make sure we find you before we take action. But and remember, re-referrals do not have to go through the same notification process, but we're going to plan at 1 o'clock to begin going through re-referrals, and these are the ones we have on list. We have House Bill 155, Recruitment of Physicians, House Bill 153, Economic Development Account 2, House Bill 10, State Parks and Historic Site Fees, House Bill 92, Property Tax Refund Program, House Bill 107, Property Tax Relief 2, House Bill 151, Tax Relief Program Amendments, House Bill 83, District Court Judge Increase. We also are going to take action on the conference report, so there may be a delay, and I apologize, but we have to get that as well. We'll march through these things. If we don't complete the re-referrals before 2 o'clock, we will attend to them and complete them after we do the interview of Mr. McVeigh for A&I. He will be interviewed immediately following adjournment, and then following that, we'll complete the process of going through all re-referred bills so that as we leave today, there will be no re-referred bills that are in our committee. They'll all have been reported back.
Okay, for those of you that are sponsors of those bills, you know, we start getting into a time crunch. My suggestion is you may want to mill around smartly pretty close to wherever Committee 2 is going to meet because you're going to run out of time otherwise. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will be meeting immediately after adjournment up in S-18. To consider House Bill 132, Surveyors and Engineers, and if time allows, before our scheduled telephone interviews, we will discuss contacts for public improvement bid requirements. Beginning at 12:45, we will do interviews by telephone for John Stoll, Community Development Authority, Gary Negich, Business Council Board of Directors, Donald Russell, Business Council Board of Directors, Pamela Snell, Community Development Authority, Edward Lum, Community Development Authority, and Nathan Becky, Business Council Board of Directors. And further, Mr. Chairman, on Monday, upon the noon recess, the same committee, number 9, will meet in H-18 to discuss interim topics.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the Select Committee on Legislative Technology will hold a meeting at 8 a.m. on Monday morning in room 302 to discuss interim topics. And your committee number 7, Elections and Political Subdivisions, will meet Monday at 9 a.m. in House 18 with their counterparts in the House to discuss interim topics. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further announcements? The motion is that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The Senate's in recess until 2 p.m.